If you're like me and you're a draft nerd, and I imagine if you're watching the show and you're a regular viewer, you might be, and you're also on Twitter and have been for a long time and follow all the other draft nerds, you probably have been following Shane Hallam of the Draft Countdown for a long time. From the very beginning of Twitter, ever since I first got on 2010, this was the first draft dude that I followed. And the reason is that he went deeper and farther than just about anybody else. The extent of the work that he does is really impressive. And if you're like me, it's a lot of fun to follow. And we're going to do that today. He did a full league-wide 7-round mock draft about a week ago. We're going to go through his Seahawks selections. We're also just going to talk about his scouting process, all the work that does go into his rankings and his mock drafts, how he sees certain players fitting in to Seattle. And then we're going to go through his draft list. And you're going to want to stick around to the end because I ask him about a certain player on the Seahawks roster, veteran player, guy that's been around for a while, guy that Shane had rated very highly when he came out in the draft years ago. Career didn't work out the way he thought it would. And then he had a resurgence. And Shane literally says that it's one of his proudest evaluations. So stick around for that. We've got lots coming up today talking Seahawks draft with Shane Hallam of the Draft Countdown on Seahawks Forever. Today, let's go.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast. In-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
Six days away from the draft now. Who is that? Who wears number six right now? Is that Kobe Bryant? Are we Kobe Bryant days away from the NFL draft? First round anyway. Just to let you know, the plan this year again, I will be live streaming all throughout the first round of the draft. You'll be able to view it here on the YouTube channel, on Twitter. If we're Facebook friends, you'll be able to see it there. Be looking forward to taking all your comments, your predictions, your ideas, your critiques as we go through the first round. Then I'll do a first round recap show at the end of that. Day two, I may also live stream throughout the process, depending probably on what happens on day one. If the Seahawks end up trading down, picking up some extra selections on day two, right now they just have one at 81. That'll influence my decision. But at the very least, I'll do a full recap the night after the third round as well. And the same for Saturday. Won't live stream all throughout that, but we'll be reacting to it on Twitter. Of course, if there's any big trades or big moves or any surprises or shocks, I'll do little short reactions, but I'll wrap it all up with a full show at the end as well. Before we get into this interview with Shane Hallam, hit that like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell for notification of all future episodes. If you prefer audio episodes, you can listen to the show on any platform, but if you want to hear it without ads, you can do so on Spotify for a very low monthly fee. I did have one listener reach out to me the other day and say that he was having trouble where on the free episodes, the initial ad that plays, the episode wouldn't boot up and play after that. It was just the ads and then it cut off. I haven't heard that from anyone else, but if you're having those issues, please let me know in the comments or reach out to me if we connect in another manner. Let me know so I can pass that feedback along to Spotify. Or if you just want to support me and the show, you can either buy me a coffee at the link down below or hit that super thanks button down below. Let's get to this. Shane Hallam has been with the Draft Countdown for a long time. He is now one of the managing editors of that website. You're going to want to check that out. I'll put those links, of course, in the description. But let's get into our draft discussion. Well, Shane, this is going to be fun for me. When I hopped on Twitter for the first time back in 2010, you beat me to it. You started in 2009, the very early days of Twitter, and you were the first guy that did what you do at the level that you do it that I followed. And I've always appreciated the work that you put into this process. We're going to talk about that a little bit today and a lot more. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
No, thanks for having me. I mean, I'm excited. Thank you for the kind words. It's been a while. This is my 21st draft that I've covered. So wow. I'm getting old. It feels like, right? When you start getting into the 20s there.
I always, every year I promise myself, I'm going to do more. I'm going to dive deeper. I'm going to break down more film myself. I'm going to go deeper into my own rankings. And I just, there's so many other things going on and kind of trying to cover all the bases that I like to with this show that I, when push comes to shove, I never get to where I want to, which is why I appreciate so much those of you who do the work, because I like to pick your brains and get you on the show and let the viewers kind of see that side of it for the ones who really, really do the work. So thank you for doing that. I want to, let's start there. Like, we're 6 days away now from the first round of the NFL draft. And not only do you have your big board, you've got your top 150 prospects. You do full seven-round mocks, which are more common now. More people are doing that, but you were one of the first I ever saw to do that. And I can't imagine how much work goes into that. So when does the process for, let's just focus on 2024. When did this process start and how much work, what is your process to arrive where you are today, where you're ready for the draft and you've got all your rankings and everything's locked in?
It starts really early for me. I mean, a lot of these players I watched as seniors in high school, that's really where I start usually. Some of them before that, you know, Caleb Williams has been my QB one of this class since he was in high school. That hasn't changed the entire process. So, you know, that kind of gives me a nice base line already when I've watched them in high school, watched them in college earlier than people that are just jumping into this class and you have all these players to watch for the first time. It's very overwhelming. You know, I watched a ton of these players, probably 1,000 of these players in college through the years. So I have a kind of a base to go off of going into the year. Obviously during the college season, you know, I'm keeping notes, which I just have, you know, a giant document every year of just, you know, numbers and names and notes that I put on as I go. And then a lot of it's compiling that information, you know, through that college season. In December, I take a lot of time just to kind of get a sense of, okay, what do I think? What are these players, like, as new names are kind of coming up into the sphere, like, did I watch this player? Let me compile what I wrote down. You know, let me go back, rewatch things, you know, get kind of that three-game base and reevaluate. I mean, January is pretty big when we get the full list of underclassmen. We know who's in the draft, who's out of the draft. Now I have a list of players I can go watch and really evaluate. And so, you know, my goal always is to have watched and deeply analyzed every player that's drafted in the draft. Last year I accomplished that. 2 years ago I missed one player, and this year I set a new bar for myself. I always say, you know, I don't have this background of scouting or playing football, but I can outwork anyone. You know, I'll have, like you said, I did 7-round mock drafts back in 2005 2006. And now, you know, a lot of people are doing them. So I'm doing 7-round mock drafts for 2025 and 2026 already. You know, that's how I'm trying to up my game. So my goal this year is to have watched 90% of the players signed as undrafted free agents. So I have I have a note on 2,200 players in this draft. Now some of it is grainy D3 footage or a news clip somewhere, you know. Yeah. But what I have access to, I have access to all the FBS stuff, but everything else is kind of picking and finding. And so, you know, that's really the process from, you know, we go through the All-Star games. I'm focused on that, obviously the combine. And then after the combine is, okay, who haven't I watched? Who don't I have, you know, notes on? I feel comfortable with my analysis of the top players. And then a lot of it's watching day three through undrafted players, finding what film I can, gathering names that I don't have, you know, that people with more access have. I'm like, okay, now I need to go watch this player. So I never pretend like I'm not an insider. I don't have inside information, but I'll outwork and out process anyone. And I would put up the challenge. I don't think there's anyone, including people that work for the NFL, that have watched more players and more film than I have this year for this draft. You know, they don't need to all do all of them. Right. You know, but I've done that. So that's kind of my background and my process as I go through.
Do you remember the name of the player 2 years ago that you missed?
I try to block it out. ultimately, no, it was from The Colts' seventh round pick was from Yale. Rodney Thomas was the one I missed. So I vowed never again. It won't happen again.
gonna dive deep on that Ivy League roster spot.
Yeah. Right.
Do you have a guy kind of throughout your history of doing this that you really, really are proud of that you were higher on than the consensus and that you were proven right?
There's definitely a couple. You know, one, his success was short-lived, but I remember James Robinson, the running back for the Jaguars, absolutely. Undrafted free agent, right, as a rookie, was like a monster for them.
Yeah.
You know, dealt with a ton of injuries. I mean, I was pounding the table for him as a third or fourth round pick. Goes undrafted as one of the best rookie running backs that year at a Southern Illinois. So, yeah, that's one. And then he kind of faded off a little bit. So that's one in the more recent years that I've kind of pounded the table for. Other Mike Wallace, if you remember him back from Mississippi on the Steelers a while back, I had him rated as the top 40 player. You know, he turned into a Pro Bowler. Mm-hmm. So it's a couple. I have on Draft Countdown my top 25 per position all time since I started in 2004. Hits, misses, just how I've ranked them. So if you want to go back and look at who was my 15th edge rusher ever, I have that there. The good and the bad and the ugly are there to display.
The transparency is appreciated. Let's see, just to tease people, you talked about the future. At the end of this, we are going to talk a little bit about the 2025 quarterback class because there's a lot of questions about that. I want to get into this year's or your latest. I assume your final 7-round full mock, or are you going to throw one out there in the next 6 days?
No, one more will come out on Wednesday next week. So the day before the draft, I'll have my final one. I've kind of started laying the base, but we'll do a lot of that on Tuesday and Wednesday. So it should come out Wednesday, maybe Thursday morning, depending.
And that'll be on draftcountdown.com. I want to go back though to your most recent one and look at your Seahawks selections. And again, I want to ask you about the process because when you're doing a 7-round full league mock draft, you know what these fan bases are like, right? Everyone's a draft nerd now, and people get really, really emotionally attached to prospects, ones that they decided that they love and also ones that they don't like or that they don't think are a fit. And if you make one wrong selection in a draft class of 10 or 11 with some of these teams, you know, you're going to hear about it. So it's nearly impossible, even for someone who works as hard as you do, to intimately know the ins and outs of all 32 teams. But I would imagine that you would try to do your best at that when trying to match and go through this draft, what their needs are and kind of where the value is on these drafts, these draft boards and scheme fit, coaching, personnel, that kind of thing. I mean, do you try to do as much as you can to think like all 32 GMs?
I do my best with it. It's difficult to do, especially when you're trying to get these done and accurate in time. And I do rely on a lot of feedback from fans that, you know, if they say, this is unrealistic, there are definitely some very smart fans out there that will lay out their case and I'll be like, yeah, that makes sense. Or, you know, hey, they're going to address this position because X, Y, and Z makes sense. I love researching schemes, so it's easier when you have some consistency on the coaching staff and I feel like I have an idea or, researching new offensive coordinators and how that works. And so with the Seahawks, to me, all usually, with Pete Carroll was a difficult team to mock for. You know, I think John Schneider's always been a little bit difficult because they'll go in a number of different directions and really go with value. So thankfully this year, I'm obviously being a part of the draft process, very intimate with Ryan Grubb and his offense and what he prefers, at least from the offensive side. I feel like I have a good handle and, I have some good experience with Mike McDonald, having been, I'm here in Pittsburgh as a Steelers fan. I went to Ohio State. So Mike McDonald has been on my radar for years and years as well. So I feel like I have a good handle this year on what could happen. But really this first draft for a new coach or a new GM or a new offense or defense, really sets the tone sometimes for me to reflect back through the summer and be like, okay, was I way off? What was I close? And how can I learn what this scheme is going to be and what kind of players they profile and like.
Before I put this graphic up showing your picks for the Seahawks, just your general thoughts on this draft class. It's been polarizing out there among the draft community. Some have kind of ripped this draft class for its quality, and others have said it's better than those people are letting on. What are your general feelings about the strength of this class?
I think it's a good class. I think as a whole, it's a really solid class. Like many, you know, I think we say this every year, so it's not a surprise that those first 2 days, first three rounds, are pretty strong. And day three is never going to be amazing. You know, you're never going to feel great about the depth of a class. I feel like if you can get through the top 100 picks and feel like, hey, all these players could be starters, which I feel in this class, then it's a good group. I think we have some athletic players on day three. I think you have some players that were very productive on day three. I think we have some, you know, some weaker positions that get stronger as the draft goes on, but maybe aren't strong at the top. They give a couple that are strong at the top and fall off pretty quick. And that's typical of any draft class because we're in those COVID years still where players can go back no matter what. We still have so few underclassmen declaring. And I think that's ultimately why you feel maybe the quality isn't there. But because a lot of those players have stuck around, I think there's going to be some day three and free agent steals for very experienced, smart players.
Do you give a lot of weight to the age of a prospect, or with so many what used to be called overaged players, but it's become more common this draft more than others because of those COVID years? Is it just kind of a wash this year because there are so many guys coming out at 23 and 24?
I feel like last year and this year, it's been kind of a wash. Usually it's something you take into account. Maybe you're willing to take a chance around higher than a player is worth if they're, you know, 20, 21 years old. This year, those third year players are stepped up. You know, there's going to be a couple on day three, and that's about it. And a couple that declared that shouldn't have and won't get drafted. Right. And that's what we got. So at this point, it's because there are teams like the Cleveland Browns and almost always draft 3 year players. And I'm doing the 7-round mock them in round four. I'm like, there's none left. You know, they can't take them. So it kind of has to be a wash at that point.
Okay. Let's get into this. I want to show your haul for the Seahawks. And right off the bat, fans are going to be happy because far and wide, without a doubt, Troy Fatanu, the offensive lineman, whether you view him as a tackle or a guard out of UW, has been the Seahawks' dream selection at 16, if he's there. And there's, you know, varying opinions about whether he will be or not. First of all, let's start with this. Do you see him as a guy that can succeed as tackle? In this situation, I would imagine you would have him sliding inside to guard with Charles Cross being on the roster.
Right. I think in this situation, he'd slide inside to guard. I think Troy Fatanu can be a left tackle in the NFL. I think he showed it this year as the best part of that Washington offensive line. I think it's a unique left tackle, and obviously the scheme the Seahawks are going to run, Fatanu could fit. You don't need it. Ultimately, like a couple of the tackles in this class, I think you put them at guard, give them a little bit of time to get up to speed, and I think they could be phenomenal. I think Fatanu is in that range. He's super athletic. He can pull. He's going to hit you. He has that nasty streak in him will just take guys down. I love that, and I think they're going to love it too.
If they move down, there is some sentiment that right tackle might come into play for them just because of how the draft board falls and also because of the uncertainty of Abe Lucas's health. You know, John Schneider said he's going to be ready by week one, but we don't really know what's going on with that knee. There aren't, in this right tackle class, there aren't really a lot of guys that project to be first rounders that have played guard, so it's all projection. But who are a couple of guys, maybe early 20s, mid-20s, if they were to slide down? Is it an Amarius Mims, a Tyler Guyton, that even though they haven't played guard, you could see being able to make that transition?
I think that's what gets tough. Like, you know, I think a guy like J.C. Latham out of Alabama, I'd feel comfortable putting in a guard. I think he's probably going to be gone, but if the Seahawks trade down into the 20s. And so the names you mentioned, Amarius Mims from Georgia, Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, both pretty raw, haven't started a lot of games, but they're also both pushing 6'8". I'm not sure I want that in the interior, and that's what makes it tough. And so ultimately, I think if you want a versatile player, you know, maybe they trade down to the late 20s, and then you can take a player that's being projected in early round two. Kingsley Suamataea from BYU, I think, is the ideal. Can play right tackle, can play guard, can play even play left tackle. It has that versatility. Or you could look to the Washington Huskies offense again. I think Roger Rosengarten from Washington, the right tackle, is a guy that could play inside a guard. He has the arm length. He's a little bit lighter, still maybe a little tall at over 6'5", but it has that potential. So I don't think he goes in round one, but if that widely happens on the first day of the draft, I'm not going to sit there and be like, wow, you know, huge shocker. Teams really like him.
And then I'm intrigued by your selection of Tyler Newbin at 81. We expect the Seahawks to address safety at some point in this draft. It appears that Mike McDonald favors guys that are versatile and interchangeable and can play different spots. Newbin is a guy that gets he's widely considered by most to be the most instinctive safety, natural safety, but he gets knocked for his athleticism. What do you like about Tyler Newbin?
I think he plays faster and more athletic on the field than his testing. I was pretty surprised at how bad Tyler Newbin's testing was, and that could play a good part to getting him at 81. You know, he wouldn't be there if he tested better, but that versatility is what Newbin brings to the table. At Minnesota, he was by far the best defensive player on that team, and they had him playing, you know, one deep, free safety, middle of the field, using his eyes to watch the quarterback, make a play on the ball, be all instincts. They played him in the box against more run-heavy teams as more of a strong safety type, kind of faux linebacker type, where he was reading and responding to what the running back was doing, getting to the edge, stopping those big runs from happening. You know, he played in the slot. He covered slot receivers, and he definitely has the footwork and the knowledge to do that. I think that type of versatility is something the Seahawks defense has lacked for a while and really is a fit to me for what Mike McDonald wants his safeties to do. They don't always have to be the most athletic player if they can be versatile and do a bunch of different things.
Kind of reminds me of Jair Brown out of Penn State last year a little bit, who at one point was in Daniel Jeremiah's top 40, and then he tested poorly at the combine, slipped in the draft. The 49ers take him later. He ends up playing some significant minutes down the stretch and look like a player. How much you touched on it, but how much weight, how much of a struggle is it for you to reconcile what you see with your eyes when you watch the tape and then testing numbers, and how much weight do you give to each?
It's tough. I think it's one of the hardest things to do with this is you watch a player, like I said, for me, for years, and have an opinion, and then the testing is not what you expect. And I think the important thing with testing is not to take it as Bible, but to go back and watch the player and say, did I miss something? And there's plenty of players that, you know, the Miami safeties, Cameron Kitchens and James Williams, for example, are players that I had rated pretty highly, tested really bad. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. And I went back and watched it. I'm like, I was wrong. You know, they're not super athletic. So that happens too. Tyler Newbin's kind of on the other end where I went back and watched him. And I'm like, okay, maybe he's not quite as athletic as my notes said, but I don't think he's as poor an athlete as that testing is. So he's still, you know, my top four safeties. He's still a round two pick, flirting with the top of that at round two, perhaps, depending on how teams view the testing. I think you got to take it into account, but I don't think it's the be-all, end-all, especially when we talk about draft capital. Maybe it knocks a guy a round or two. It usually doesn't kill them unless it's really egregious. And, you know, some teams care about that testing more than others. You start to identify those patterns and identify which teams will have them off the board and which won't.
It's one of the things that will be fascinating about watching the Seahawks draft this year, even though it's the same scouting staff and GM making the selections. It's for a new staff. And we knew some of the athletic and physical thresholds that Pete Carroll favored in the past. And you could always kind of eliminate certain prospects from the draft process when trying to decide who the Seahawks are going to take because they didn't have long enough arms. They just didn't run a fast enough 40 or whatever. Not so sure this year. How hard is it for you to maintain that open-mindedness you just touched on when you're forced with new information or you discover new information and you have to decide whether or not you're going to change your mind about a player after you thought you knew who he was?
It's the ultimate piece of this process. And, you know, I always say nothing is the whole pie. I think there are people out there that are like the film is it. And the combine's worthless. And I think those people are missing something. I think people that, after the combine, just drastically change everything they've thought, you know, I don't think that's the right way to go. I think it's, you know, the film to me is a large piece of the pie, but we have these other pieces, the All-Star games, the combine, character, you know, all these things that play a part and where a player is going to get drafted and where he fits. So to me, that's the important piece. Like, I need to reconcile, okay, this guy's getting knocked down around. There are plenty of players that I think should go in round two, round three that are not. And I have to when I make a mock draft, it's not what I think. You know, it's what I think NFL teams will do. And you just have to be able to separate those two things.
Do you try as much as you can to tune out the noise and not listen to other analysts as much for fear that it might influence your decision?
I am not that way. I have people that I respect. There are other people do this that I don't respect as much. But, you know, a lot of the Daniel Jeremiah, having Lance Sirlein, probably for NFL.com is the best talent evaluator is not working for a team out there. You know, it doesn't mean I agree with everything he says, but if he says something very different from what I think, what that says to me is I better go back and watch again. You know, I better check my work. And sometimes I come away and say, I think he's wrong. And sometimes I come away and say, I was wrong. Maybe I need to raise this guy up or drop this guy a little bit. So to me, I think that's the best way to do it. If you have people that you like and respect, take their word, but definitely go back and don't just take it as this is the truth. But let me go back and reevaluate my process. I think if you don't do that, that's where you get guys. You know, when someone has like really crazy rankings, we have seen some out there on the Twitterverse that yes, are really out there. To me, what it says is, you know, if you're saying that and like everyone else is not, you're missing something. Yeah. You know, you probably want to check and see what you're missing. It doesn't mean you can't say, hey, I don't think Caleb Williams is as good as everyone says. Like, that's, you can have that opinion, you know, but if you have him as a fourth round pick, like, something's probably wrong. You know, you're probably doing something wrong. And I think that's the difference, is you kind of have to weigh those things and recheck yourself. Because when you watch players, when you watch film, you know, when I just have film like every morning for 2-3 hours a day, you know, I'm tired sometimes. Like, I'm going to grade a guy lower. I'm having a bad day. Like, that happens. And you have to recognize that you have bias and how to reduce that.
It's funny when you talked about crazy against the grain rankings. One name popped to mind, and then you mentioned Caleb Williams as a fourth round. I knew we were both thinking of the same guy.
Yeah, by your face. I was like, we're both on the same page here.
Let's go back to these for a second. At 102, again, inside linebacker, a huge need on this roster, even though the Jerome Baker and Terrell Dodson signings, quality, solid players. But 1 year deals, so it'd be nice to get a guy in that room, at least one. Maybe they double dip in this draft on a 4-year rookie contract. Trotter is a guy who, you know, he was very, very highly ranked preseason. The name might have had a lot to do with that. That carries a lot of weight, obviously. But a guy that seems to have settled into about this range now, little undersized. But I've seen many scouting reports that peg him as the most instinctive linebacker. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. You know, he reminds me of a smaller Patrick Queen, you know, in college, which is why I thought this fit would be really good, you know, in Mike McDonald's defense, you know, where you don't need Trotter to come in day one because of the Dodson and Baker signings and play. I think he has the instincts. He has the ability. Sometimes I think Jeremiah Trotter just needs a little more development on how to hone things in, how to have a little bit of patience, how to, if teams try to kind of fool him, he gets fooled pretty easily and he over pursues and goes too far. I think it's a lot easier to rein those type of players in than get a player without instincts to have instincts. So I think Trotter could be really good, but needs a little bit of work. And I think the versatility that he could bring to the table too, to play either inside linebacker position, fits here. So if he's there at 102, would make a lot of sense.
Interesting comp with Patrick Queen. That's hadn't heard that before, but 6'2", 228. Sounds about right. Yep. Another guy who is undersized at 118, Mohamed Kamara out of Colorado State, edge player. He's built like a linebacker, 6'1.5", 241, but plays off the edge. Incredible production, 45.5 tackles for loss, 30.5 sacks, 5 forced fumbles. Kalijah Kancey was a massive favorite in Seahawks mocked draft, the Seahawks mock draft community last year among fans as an undersized interior defensive lineman. What is it about Kamara that makes you think at that size, coming from a little bit of a lower level of competition, that he can be a good pro?
I think the production that you see from him, you know, when you watch him on film, he's not a super athlete, but athletic enough. And he also performed against the top competition when Colorado State played up. Kamara still perform. That doesn't always happen with those type of players. Sometimes they eat those sacks in the smaller schools. So I think that, you know, the first step, I love that Muhammad Kamara just has a number of different pass rush moves. I mean, he has a really nice swim right off the snap. If an offensive lineman's not ready, he has a nice spin move inside. He has a rip that improved throughout the season. So I think that kind of smart play can be a situational pass rusher. While he has some of the closing speed, like you said, of a linebacker with his size, because he's not super tall, which can be an issue against some longer arm tackles, but can set the edge against the run. So I think it'd be an interesting, you know, developmental kind of backup who maybe, you know, if you have a couple injuries at the edge rusher position or even in the linebacker position outside, he could fill in and do that.
And then at 179, Logan Lee, defensive lineman out of Iowa. This is a name that I haven't seen mocked very often in those that I exchange Seahawk mocks with or my viewership. Tell me about him. At first glance, he caught my eye at the combine. He was pretty athletic for his size, 6'5", 281. Mostly played inside in a four-point stance, but I wonder kind of, he's built almost like Mike Morris was coming out of Michigan last year. Do you see him kind of being a big end maybe in a hybrid 3-4 type scheme like we think McDonald's going to run?
Yeah, that's where I would peg him in kind of the, and maybe on the other side, backing up Draymond Jones would make sense. Lee was a tight end recruit out of high school who bulked up and, you know, Iowa and their tight ends bulked up and started playing on the defensive line. And they moved him around. I mean, he played inside on the three tech. They moved him out to edge rusher at times. Different teams are going to have Logan Lee at different positions. But I think with his size and athleticism, he could play maybe a right end spot, give you a little more depth there. And if, you know, if you need him to stand up on a play, you could do that. Once again, I think just more depth for that front seven to really improve that if there's injuries.
And then Jordan Travis, who I've talked a lot about on the show, he's been a favorite of mine for a while. A number of analysts have name dropped him. Dane Brugler had him going, I think, in this exact same spot in his full seven rounder earlier this week. We saw the video earlier this week of him dropping back, no brace on his leg. He appears to be healthy. This quarterback class has gotten a lot of attention for how it drops off after the sixth spot and maybe the seventh spot. Spencer Rattler has his fans out there. How do you view Travis? Is this a guy that might have long-term starter potential, or is it just a lottery ticket you're taking in the sixth round to see if it'll stick?
I think Travis is going to stick around the league for a while. I don't know if he's ever a sure starter, but I could see Travis being one of those backup quarterbacks that pops around from team to team and always gives you a chance if you have to plug him in. I really liked the fit here with the Seahawks, where Travis could come in as the QB3, you know, behind Geno Smith, behind Sam Howell, make sure that he's completely healthy, you know, improve a little bit in terms of some of his mechanics. And I think Travis has the instincts and the leadership ability, like I said, to stick around and command a huddle if he has to come on due to injury. I think he can definitely outperform this draft position and stick around the league. So I like the fit. I think when you look at a day three quarterback, you know, everyone would love to draft Brock Purdy. It's not going to happen. But, you know, if you get a player that's going to stick around your roster for 4 years and be a serviceable backup, that's pretty valuable. And I think there are only 8 teams in the NFL that had a quarterback to start the entire season last year.
And then at 235, this is a name that I wasn't familiar with. Didn't go to the combine. Went to the Shrine Bowl, though. A.J. Woods, cornerback Pitt. Another position that fans may think that position set because they literally brought the entire cornerback room back intact from last year, even re-signing Artie Burns and tendering Michael Jackson. 5'11", 195, really experienced. Played in a total of 59 games throughout his career at Pitt. Only 11 starts at corner, though. What do you like about Woods?
I think Woods is such a versatile, high-end athlete that he had special teams ability, which he played at Pitt throughout early in his career, a number of years. So you have the special teams ability on coverage units. He played safety. He played corner. Just having that type of versatile backup on the taxi squad that you can bring up, you know, bring up from the practice squad and have him, you know, we need some depth. We had a defensive backfield injury. He can fill in. We can plug him in on special teams, and if we need him to play a couple snaps, he can play a couple snaps. I think for a seventh-round pick, you're swinging for the fences when you have a 90 percentile athlete at the cornerback position. So I like that fit, and I don't think you can have enough defensive backfield depth in today's NFL with all the passing going on.
Indeed. Now, I mentioned that we're going to talk a little bit about the future. You talked about Jordan Travis. The quarterback question is one that won't go away around the Seattle Seahawks, even after the trade for Sam Howell. It kind of died down for a little bit, and then the buzz around Michael Penix started to grow. He had the great pro day and tested more athletically than people expected he would, and sounds like the medicals are right, and there's the obvious connection here. But they've also met with Bo Nix. They've met with Spencer Rattler. They've done all the due diligence on the top of this quarterback class, which leads some to believe that if the draft falls a certain way, they still might be done or might not be done. In fact, John Schneider has said trading for Sam Howell, as much as we like him, doesn't preclude us from making another significant quarterback move in the draft. I don't expect that to happen. I think the way the draft is going to fall, they'll do exactly what you project here. They'll take a shot on someone later in the draft, see if they can develop him, but they may have an eye on a little bit more of the future. They are high on Howell, but you also look ahead to next year's quarterback class. This year was so unique in that the draft is solid and six deep with guys that most view as potential starters. There were also a number of free agent and veteran options available this year, which was unusual. Usually there's scraps in the offseason. And so there is a thought that the teams that were really desperate, a large number of them, are going to address quarterback this year, and there might be a little less of a market next year. But also the class itself has gotten knocked. It's not very good. If you're planning on next year's quarterback class, that's a bad plan. How do you view that class? Because now it seems like there's some pushback among the scouting community, and some guys are starting to come out and say, wait, 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 that class might be better than you think.
It's bad. I'm in the it's bad class. Okay. Now, look, we always have players emerge. If I was on the show last year and you asked me about Jaden Daniels, I would have called you crazy.
Wouldn't have been a first rounder. Top three
pick. Yeah. Right? So like, we're gonna have players emerge. I think there's a lot of players in the 25 class with potential to be number one overall picks. Like, there's a lot of good athletes. There's guys with good arms that haven't put it together. Players that were looking like and got injured. You know, I think there's a bunch of different types of quarterbacks in the 25 class that could project high if all things break the right way. And that always happens. And things do break the right way, you know, but you know, this year we had Caleb Williams. We had Drake May. We knew they were going to be top quarterbacks. The year before, we had Bryce Young. We had CJ Stroud. We knew they're going to be top quarterbacks. I mean, Will Levis and Bo Nix even, we're already in that conversation. I don't have that next year. I just updated my big board for the 2025 class. Mm-hmm. My top quarterback's 36th overall in that class. So I don't have a first rounder.
And that's Quinn Ewers, right? Is that your top? That's your top guy.
Quinn Ewers from Texas. And then Carson Beck from Georgia is only a couple spots down from that. And neither of them, Quinn Ewers has the tools and just, it has, you know, as we see in this draft class, has a ton of great players that he played with and still couldn't do it, you know, to be that top guy. Carson Beck, very safe, very, you know, game manager type player for Georgia this year. Maybe he improves and he could be that guy. Like, you know, Shedeur Sanders gets a ton of hype for Colorado. I think that's false. And we have guys like Jalen Milroe from Alabama or Cam Ward who went to Miami or DJ Uiagalelei, who was supposed to be the top guy of this class and fell back going to Florida State to replace Jordan Travis. Like, there's a lot of players with a ton of athletic potential that could do it. That doesn't mean that you should take a quarterback in 2024 because we're scared of 2025. So we better take our shot now. Like, there's not a quarterback that you feel is a fit is worth it. Don't take it. I say this every year. Every year we hype up the quarterback class. You know, Will Levis is going to go top five and Malik Willis is going to go in the first round because teams need quarterbacks. They do. But teams aren't going to just pick a quarterback because they need a quarterback. I don't think we're going to see six quarterbacks go in the first round. I would be pretty floored if that happens. We've never had four quarterbacks go in the top nine of the NFL draft in the modern era. I don't think it happens this year either, even though every single person's mocking that to happen. Yeah. That's just how it works. So I think Seattle, if there's not the value's not there at any point, you have Geno Smith. Like, you are good for at least another year. You have Sam Howell. Now you have a backup option. You don't have to risk it. You don't have to reach. You don't have to take a player you're not comfortable with. Yeah. And next year, someone will emerge. If you really want to give up the goat and go up and get it, you can. But that's, you know, I do think right now the 25 class is very bad at quarterback. That doesn't mean that it's going to look that way in a year. And I think that's the key. We still have a whole year to go to evaluate these players for them to improve.
Kind of puts that Sam Howell trade in a different light. He's under contract for two more years, kind of a hedge maybe that if Geno doesn't fit in well with Ryan Grubb or take that next step and Sam Howell doesn't prove to be the guy. I don't know. It's fascinating to me that they made that move. What was your grade on Howell coming out a couple of years ago? Because Schneider has been pretty open about how they liked him in that process and really strongly considered taking him, even though they had just gotten Drew Lock back in the Russell Wilson trade. It just, the draft didn't fall that way. What was your grade on Howell?
Yeah, I had him rated much higher than he went. I think like a lot of people, watching him through his career, I really felt like Howell carried that North Carolina team on his back for a number of years. So I thought he should have been a day two pick. And I thought that's kind of where he should have ultimately went in that draft. And the fact that he fell as far as he did, I think we've seen even, you know, with some of the issues that happened toward the end of last season, he probably should have been picked a little bit higher. So he was my number three quarterback in that class. Mm-hmm. I had him rated as a third round selection. And, I think he's perhaps emerging as the best quarterback in that class, not named Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Even kinda if he does nothing way. Else.
Yeah. And then after his sophomore year, shoot, there were projections that he was a first round pick. Did you kind of, because you're a guy that looks into the future a year earlier, were you in that class? Did you kind of have him being at the top of the draft?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he should be. And, ultimately that final year for him was not as good, but you still saw him as a 19, 20 year old, command an offense with nothing around him. And, will that team ran the football a ton. And that's not his game, right? I mean, he's doing what he can to win. And I think he got knocked for that a little bit. So you might need to, kind of repurpose and reprogram Sam Howell. But I think that potential is still there to be, I don't think he's going to be a Pro Bowler, but to be a solid NFL starter that can lift the team and get to the playoffs.
As long as you've been doing this, I would imagine it was a very unique to watch Geno Smith's career arc, because a guy that's a high second round pick expected to be the savior with the Jets. And then he reached a point in his career where he was written off. He was a bust. He's going to be a career journeyman backup. And then he has this resurgence. What was that like for you watching the entire arc of that?
I've tweeted a couple times when Geno Smith's taken off, like finally validated on my Geno Smith draft projection 2013. Not counting this current 2024 class, Geno Smith is my 20th overall quarterback I've ever rated since 2004 as a prospect. Yeah. I chalked that up as a loss, right? I mean, I failed at that evaluation, and to see him be able to come back, play at a Pro Bowl, almost an All Pro level, is phenomenal. I think it shows you what, how much he had physical tools, and there's a lot of development that was needed from the technique side that he didn't get early in his career with the situation he was in. And you see, when you have the intangibles and are willing, even at a later age, to learn those things, what that can do and how that can change you. I think you should be an inspiration to someone like a Sam Howell, who probably feels like his career isn't done. I think Geno Smith said that, that he's been in that boat. So I think it's exceptional. And then I hope we see other players emerge that were top picks that didn't work out, that get their shot again.
Yeah, man, Shannon, I really appreciate it. This was as fun as I expected it to be. And even more, I appreciate all the work that you do. And as long as you've been doing it and all your hard work, and I'm just glad I got to catch up with you and connect and have you on the show. And I'd love to do it again after the draft sometime. We can break it all down.
No, that'd be a blast. I appreciate you having me. It was a ton of fun.
All right. Thanks, Shane. Try to keep it together the next 6 days.
No, thanks. I'll try.
All right. Thanks. What'd you think of that? How'd you like his draft? Guys like Logan Lee and Kamara are guys that I haven't typically mocked to the Seahawks, but I'm open-minded to it, just like I was on Monday when I went over, a couple days ago, went over Dane Brugler's full seven-round mock draft, and Jonah Ellis was their third-round pick, another guy that I hadn't widely mocked or looked as deep into as some other product or prospects. So give me your thoughts on those guys, and tune in tomorrow because I'm going to do an episode. Follow me on Twitter. You know this is coming, at Seahawks Forever, by the way. I've had a bunch of viewer mock drafts turned into me, and I'm going to go through those and kind of highlight the ones that I like and not necessarily grade them, but rate them, give shout outs, and just show kind of how Seahawks mock draft Twitter community is thinking heading into the meat of draft week. Until then, follow me on Twitter. Thank you for supporting the show and watching, as always. Forever and always, go Hawks.